outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Chain. The God Chain. The God Chain.
This is the last day of my trip to Europe, and I'm in Valorbe, Switzerland, with my friend Silvio Viotti. Yeah?
Yes, I'm here.
And Dominique. Dominique isn't here. She's working at the moment. Yeah. You have retired, Silvio?
Yeah.
It's hard to believe. You're young. 48, you retired. How'd you do that?
It's 7 days.
7 days you've been retired?
Yeah.
Was it mandatory?
No.
Did they terminate you?
Well, it was mandatory for me, but not for them.
They liked you there. You were in IT.
Yeah.
Silvio's been on the podcast twice before. You can go back and look in the archive and listen to a bit of his story and some of the things we've talked about in the past. Last time we talked on a podcast, it was 2012, 7 years ago. We did the first one 2010.
Wow.
Yeah, I've known you a long time.
Me too.
And then I don't know how I got here because I'm ready to go home. And you told me don't come to Switzerland. If I dare come to Switzerland without visiting you,
I would kill you.
You would kill me.
Yeah.
In love.
In love.
Oh, well, that's.
Oh, yeah.
That's the way I want to go.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Ask anytime.
This has been a wild trip. Started in Norway. Gosh, almost 2 weeks ago now. Yeah, you're laughing. The Norwegians, funny people.
Yeah. Right? What strange idea to go there. Anyway.
I know when I the original thing was to go to Italy and do this DTS, and when I mentioned that on the website, I just, you know, there's other things God's got in Europe, and I had about 7 requests to go different places, and the 2 that seemed to resonate in my heart, seemed to be the right way to go, was Norway of all places. And you know, when you're standing in America and you kind of look at Europe clear over there and you think, Norway, it's close to Italy, right? It's not that far.
Yeah, not that far away. That's right. Just a little cooler, but it's,
Yeah, and it's actually to go to Norway, then to go to Italy, and then to come to Switzerland, that was not the best probably itinerary plan, especially when the pilots in Norway went on strike right after I arrived. That was not good. I had my flight out Sunday morning to get down to Italy in time for the DTS to begin. There's no plane.
Okay. And walking from there, it's a little long.
Walking from there is tough. Taking a train is tough because there's like water between Norway and the rest of the planet. Yeah. Unless you go, I can go clear around Russia. You could.
Or is it Norway that Santa Claus has his house? You can take a sleigh ride.
A sleigh ride?
Yeah.
Across the water?
Yeah, in the air. I mean, if it's...
Oh, you know, Santa Claus.
Santa Claus. Oh, sorry.
I misunderstood.
Excuse my accent.
I just didn't think Santa Claus was real. Oh, I shouldn't say that. People listening to the podcast.
Careful. Be careful what you say.
People listening, kids and things.
Yeah,
anyway. So...
But when you look at me, you can see it's...
So I've had kind of culture shift through this whole thing. I mean, I was first in Norway and... the Norwegian language, and then I was in Italy, and some Italian, but there was people there from all over, different places, so lots of different accents and languages, and then the Swiss part, or the German part of Switzerland.
Yeah. That's, I think, Norway or Italy or whatever, it's always better than Swiss German.
Ooh, you're going to take on my friends over in the northern part.
Yeah. Well, they know that, you know.
So you're in the western part of Switzerland, so this is the French-speaking area?
Yeah, oui? That's the best part of Switzerland.
It's the best part?
Yeah.
And we're an hour away from where John Calvin hoisted his
that's right.
teachings upon the world.
That's right.
I haven't been there. I got to go out of there tomorrow in the airport, but I haven't seen that. So you've lived in Europe all your life, right?
But for almost 3 years in the States. 37 years ago.
37 years ago?
Yeah.
Did it hurt you?
It was nice.
It was nice
to be in the States. It was a nice day. That's where our first daughter was born.
Yeah. Where were you at in the States?
New Jersey.
I forget. New Jersey. You were studying or? You were studying or working?
No, working for the Swiss company.
Okay.
I was a field technician.
Field technician. Silvio's also, we mentioned this on past podcasts, but those of you may not know, he's translated a number of my books into French.
That's right.
So they've gotten to the French-speaking world, of which I'm incredibly grateful. And you've always just done it volunteer. I'll just do it.
Yeah.
And because there's not a...
It's a pleasure. It was a pleasure.
Not a big demand for French books in the world. And the lady who puts them out doesn't make a lot of money at it. She just kind of makes them available in the world. So I clicked my pen pretty loud. That's because we're sitting in not my normal podcast arena. So what do you, I mean, this, I we already told me nothing, but I'm going to ask you again. I mean, you lived here in Europe. You have pretty good touches, people in France and Ireland, other England, other places.
Yeah.
Do you see God doing anything in Europe that excites you, encourages you, or depresses you? I get asked that. When I get back, people say, what do you see God doing in Europe? And I'm going to give them your answer.
Okay. Nothing.
Nothing.
I don't, maybe it's because I don't see people in Europe that often. Like in France, we still have friends, but we don't see each other. They live near Paris, and we have some other friends that are maybe 2 hours from here. But we kind of stop seeing each other. You know, life put us together from some times, and we still have contact, but... And as we don't are part of any group or any congregation, we don't know, and we don't look at on the web to see if God is doing something, because he doesn't have a Facebook account. So,
and there's no God account.
No.
There's a TV show at home. It's called the God Friended Me. It's a God account on Facebook.
Oh,
but maybe I don't think it's God.
Not in Europe.
Well, yeah, maybe it'll come here someday, or or you pirate it off the web somehow.
Yeah,
your experiences in the dark web, or whatever it is that you do.
Maybe. No, so I don't see much. We had some people that wanted to go out of the system, and they were, I don't know if you talk about, or if you knew Patrick Fontaine.
About what? That would sound Patrick, like French to
Patrick
me.
Fontaine, yeah, it's a French guy.
I don't know him.
He was kind of preaching, meeting people and telling them to go out of the system, or for people who wanted to go out of the system. And they were still, after 2 years, I think they were still meeting together, and they were still, so they made another meeting. I went once or twice to see him. He was a good friend of mine. I don't see him anymore. And so something was coming, but I think what's very hard for most of the people is to step out for good. They are afraid to be alone, or to not to have friends anymore, or I don't know, but that's one of the things I see most. And you remember when we were in southwest of France.
I do.
With these friends.
Yep, from all over.
And the two friends we had that were with us, mm-hmm. they were going to, in these meetings of these guys, we stopped seeing each other as well because we didn't have contacts. I think we should recontact them, but it was not like... They were again following what this guy and what he was telling, and this guy was—he's very—he's a very nice guy and has a, how do you call that, charisma, and so people are more often attracted to the guy than to the what he said. I don't think he does it on purpose, but that's too bad.
Yeah, so you see people, and you've seen people over the years. I have too. People that kind of seem to be on a fresh journey, kind of excited about God doing something different in their hearts, and kind of make some initial steps down a pathway that's less defined, and then run back into whatever it was they were part of before, or just reinvent it in a different way.
That's a problem. And well, there are some weird people as well. We met some guys who. We have some theories and say, okay, yeah, good. You go on. We leave, you go on. We don't want to be involved.
There's a lot of that, isn't there? I run into a lot of that in Europe, probably more than the States, and maybe because people get burned out on it quicker in the States. But there's a lot of looking over to, you know, American meetings or new things or books to try and give them something new to follow. The whole invitation to come follow Jesus and how it is that he nudges you. I do know people all over Europe who live that way. I mean, I do, but they're in small pockets and corners, and no one's making a big fuss out of it. And no one's having conferences over it, and
no one's building
ministries out of it. I think part of the problem is, particularly people who start. I've watched this from a lot of, you know, leader types, former pastor types, or people who want to teach whatever, and they really do see through some of the flaws in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And there's got to be a better way to do this Jesus thing, and then they try to find those ways. And I think what's always underlying it is, there's a business model for religious things that we know works. And that's you've got to pull enough people together to get quote-unquote critical mass, to have enough income, and whether that's a book that's big enough or a meeting that's big enough. And I think one of the scary things for people who could really be wonderfully a blessing to others if they continued on the path they started on was if they could, you know, trust Jesus for their resource rather than have to make the practical decisions for an income stream.
Like this guy I was talking about, he was a pastor in a church in France, and we visited him. He had a journey that was crazy. He was in the gangs. He was in satanic cults, and he got hit with a baseball bat in the head.
Wow!
He went to a satanic priest to ask him to be healed by him, and the priest said to him, "You have more power than I have, so I cannot do anything to you." So he went to the hospital, and there. On his side was a Christian who talked about Jesus, and he got saved and healed. He had all kind of sickness with the liver and stuff, and he got totally healed, and he started preaching the gospel. And when we knew him, he was pastor of a church, and you could see that. And he told us that once he was preaching everywhere and he got sick. He went into a coma and he had a vision of Jesus. And Jesus told him, leave Babylon. And for him, Babylon was the system of the church. And when he told us that, we asked him, so when are you leaving your church? Said, yeah, but you know, we have some people who need some nurturing, and I cannot live like that. Said, but if Jesus tells you that and you don't do it, it's going to be something bad is going to happen. And in fact, something bad happened. His elders threw him out, and they made a site, a website, giving him very bad reputation. So he had to go out. And for a while he was alone. He was working, because I think he had some teaching diploma, something like that. But after a while he came back and started teaching again. And that makes me sad, because I mean, I would like to have Jesus talk to me like he did to him. He never did that. But I think this is, for a lot of people, this is a problem. To stop totally what you were doing before. And
you think everybody should? Would your desire be that everybody get out of the system, or think that God's calling them to do that?
No, I don't think. But when
He does,
when people have a call of leaving the system and doing something else, and you don't do it, I mean that's not good.
Well, I think it lessens the road God wants to take you on. I don't know that God's going to punish you for not doing it.
No,
wouldn't say that.
No, I don't say that.
Yeah. But you said something bad what happened to him, and then it did. But it's just,
It was not bad, but it was God found a way for him to do what he was asking him to do. Mm. And it was not a good way because he was not doing it by himself. So, well, it hurts him. And I was sad about that when he told us the whole story. I said, I don't want to tell you I told you so, but...
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad you didn't. I didn't want to tell you, but I feel like I must.
Yeah, yeah.
So here it is.
I don't want to punch you in the face because you are stronger than me, but...
I've had friends in the U.S. do the same thing, whether they're writers or pastors or whatever. They get a calling to discover a different way of doing this, and whether they try and create a network of house churches or they try to do some books that they're... I mean, we all did. I think when I first started writing about some of the things outside of the normal way of doing things, I thought, because this is what I've been looking for my whole life. And I don't mean getting out of church. A relationship with Jesus that's bigger than the institutional obligations that we put on people.
Yep.
And so I'm horribly excited. I'm writing stuff thinking, man, the world, this is what everybody's been waiting for. And then you find out, no, not exactly. we're meeting in those things because there's a lot of people that have this love-hate relationship. They like it, the stability of it, I guess. They like it until it blows apart. But they like the something to go to, something my kids are in. They're learning about Jesus. And and so when people start seeing stuff, I know one person in particular starts seeing stuff, wrote some books on it, just couldn't find the audience he wanted to find, and even wrote a blog on, I'm going back where everybody else, I'm just going to forget this whole living outside the system thing, and I'm just going to talk about stuff people can live inside or outside with. And I honestly think it's either I'm chasing a bigger audience or I need a business model. And the whole get-together Sunday morning, there's a business model there. Where the pastorpreneur title, I love that. It's not my terminology, but I like the most things, you know, the guy's maybe got a gift and he needs a place to do it. And so he starts his own congregation and he just got to build enough of a ministry to get the income coming. So his life works and off he goes.
Yeah.
And then I think it is hard for people to get down that road. And when it gets to down, am I really going to trust Jesus? Or do I trust what I see with my eyes and what I know how to do in my own strength?
Yeah,
and it's not just pastors' types. It's all of us. We start on this wonderful. Yeah. I'm going to learn to trust Jesus, and then get about 10 feet in and go, it's like sticking your foot in cold water, and you go, let's go swimming, and then you're about up to your ankles, and they're getting numb. No. Let's go back and sit on the beach for a while. And I do see a lot of that. I do, but I also see a lot of people, even on this trip, people I've been with, who really have made huge decisions and really are finding a different way to live. And they've gone through this 2-3 year period of real disorientation and not sure what God's doing. And maybe I made the wrong choices. And what about my kids if they're not doing this and that and the other thing? And then I meet people who are 10, 12 years into that journey, who are finding their way in peace, finding God's provision, whether it's for your kids and their journey or whatever. And I find that all over Europe, too. I mean, you know some of those folks because we've met with them in various places.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think that's growing.
Right. And we had some kind of journey like that as well. I mean, leaving a system. Well, we've been in many systems, from the Brethren to the Evangelical and some other evangelicals and alone and again. So we've been learning a lot every time, but we had to leave the systems because it was not what we wanted. Deep inside, it was not resounding, and it was not the good thing for us. And when we finally, with Dominique, we realize it's around about 20 years we left the system. Mm-hmm. It was very hard. We were alone, and for our kids that were young at the time, it was hard as well. But we don't regret it.
Yeah, that's the thing. 20
even,
years later,
even if we had the opportunity to meet a lot of people. Unfortunately, they are not around us, But it's okay. We have contact with them, like in England or Ireland or even France in the States. You know, sometimes in near Los Angeles, there I know a guy, kind of weird guy, but doesn't know how to walk down the mountain. It's
okay. Are you talking about me, really? Wow, that's hurtful. Yeah. I came all this way just to be with you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you had to because you were in Switzerland.
I didn't have to. There was a wonderful flight.
If you want to leave Switzerland alive, you have to come to visit me.
That's a wonderful flight from Zurich to Los Angeles. I could have been on it yesterday. Instead, I get on a train and I come over here to the west to be abused, to be dragged up a mountain and to the cross.
Yeah, but there was a cross I was going to say. I dragged you to the cross.
Oh, my gosh. We climbed almost, well, if you trust the technology, climbed about 1,000 feet over a mile and a half. Yeah, I mean, it was a steep climb to this incredible vista all over this part of Switzerland, the mountains, the Alps beyond. And we saw into France. Yeah.
Behind us was France.
Yeah, because they're very close to the border here. That was lovely. And then, coming down, it was a little bit wet, a little muddy. And I shoes that didn't grip too well. So fortunately, I never ended up on my keister, although I did some major body surfing just to stay up.
Yeah. And it was kind of a parkour move. It was very nice.
Parkour was where I was in Italy. Parkour ministry, which you don't know, that's people who glide through cities and climb buildings and don't use staircases the way they were designed. They'll be on the banisters, the railings, leaping, swinging, jumping, like monkeys all over the place. And they've got an outreach and a drama thing planned for the summer. And so we had a chance to kind of help them with the love of God kind of stuff. Yeah, and parkour. What I noticed was interesting, I thought this was fascinating, and this even goes to what we're talking about now. I met the guy who leads that ministry in Rome, and because I had to get this other flight out, thanks to my friend Mike back in L.A., who's a travel agent, who found me the last seat on a Norwegian Air flight. They were not on strike. It was the Scandinavian Air folks who were on strike.
Oh, right.
He found me the last seat when there were 60,000 people stranded in Norway, so I don't know how he did that, but it meant I had to get up very early and get to Rome about 8 hours before I was meeting the guy in Rome. So I got to work at the Rome airport, which was really fabulous. And then he comes, we're riding over, and we go through this one little town. He's looking out the window, and I'm looking out the window. I'm admiring the scenery and the architecture. And he goes, look at the house right there. So you go up the fence, and you go around there. Up the top and jump over that. And he's got a whole route through this house. And I'm sitting there going, I don't see it at all. I mean, I didn't see it before he started talking about it. I don't think I see it after he started talking about it. But I thought that was interesting. I thought, you know, people who just go the conventional route. I'm saying a house and a fence. And if I even want to be on the property, I'm probably going to knock on the front door and say, you know, introduce myself. I'm not going to climb up the fence, over the wall, up the shinny, up the gutter, and over the... But I think my journey in Jesus, when I heard him talking about it, I'm going, you know what, that's... What's helped me about following Jesus instead of just following human conventions is that you do see things differently. And I don't mean, parkour, going to climb. Maybe it's spiritual parkour.
Yeah. Maybe.
But going through, like, I've been helping a guy whose wife's dying of breast cancer. And, it's been a wonderful conversation. I've learned a lot going through it. But it's just, I see a different way to navigate, just ways to think differently than how we normally think. The whole, should I be praying for healing? Should I not? What is faith? And that, you know, to really, and there's going to be a blog I'm going to do about some of that probably up the road. But what I love about this journey in Jesus, it's kind of like when you look at the landscape of your life, it's kind of like the parkour guys. You're not seeing what everybody else sees because you're not just jumping down the conventional stuff. You're actually seeing ways God leads. And I know today I see ways God leads me through things a lot better than I did 15, 20 years ago. I think part of that was, like you said, leaving the conventional behind.
Yeah. And
not everybody has to do that, but when God invites you.
Of course not.
And invite's a good word for me, because I didn't like just, oh, this is horrible, got your way and get out of Babylon. I've never used that kind of language. I just felt like God said, I have more to teach you if you walk away. And they had already thrown me out, so walking away was...
it was not so hard.
Was just, well, it meant not fighting my way back in. It didn't mean all was going well and God said, oh, I've got a new thing. I could have fought my way back in, but the invitation, I have more to teach you if you walk away than if you stay. We've had Jack Gray on here from New Zealand. He says that God spoke to him saying, if you want to see the church that I'm building, you've got to leave the one that man's building. And that's not true for everybody. It's true for Jack. And yeah. Jack's and the people who've gone on this journey with you and I, we've known each other, man, at least a decade, just about a decade.
Oh, more than that.
Well, face-to-face.
Face-to-face, yeah.
And we haven't just, you know, you've been in my home, I've been in your home now. This is the third time I've been in Valorb, of all places. And we've been in Israel together on one of the trips we took there. Yeah. We've been in France together. We've been in Ireland together. I was calling you a stalker there for a while because you reached my four-country limit. If I see somebody in more than four countries, I figure they're stalking me. And now when you're threatening to kill me for leaving Switzerland without seeing you, maybe you
are. Maybe I am. That's a good thing.
But I love that invitation to say, you know, there's a different... God's not wanting to... System's bad. Everybody get out. Do it. Yeah. What he's saying is, I have a different way for you to live.
It's for every... Everybody's different, and God has a different plan for everybody.
He does.
It's not... And it's normal, because if you say that it's this one plan for everybody, you just... doing the Catholic Church or some other big thing like that.
Because, don't mention any R's, like Baptist and Charismatic.
You make one thing where one guy knows what is good for everybody, and you have to go through it. What we experience, I think I already said it, in going out was more freedom. Because we were more, we didn't have to go to Sunday school or classes and prepare the praise and prayer meeting and stuff like that. All the time we were busy with the church like crazy, so we had more time for ourselves and for our neighbors, or just real neighbors that people are living around us, and our neighbors at work.
And colleagues and co-workers.
Just like we never had before. And this continues, like, just 2 days after I retired, a guy I knew called me and asked me to work for him for his IT service, because his IT guy that he was working with from 10, 15 years ago already, he's in a deep depression. I don't know exactly what happened in his life, but I saw him because he had to brief me about the system he's going to put in place. Well, the system I'm going to put in place.
Yeah.
And I said, could you call maybe this guy and ask him? He said, no. He said, you know, I'm here. I'm not trembling. I'm not stuttering. I'm speaking okay. So... it's just unbelievable that I can do that. I said, "Wow, this guy is in bad shape." And who knows? I mean, and Dominic was telling me, "You don't know. Maybe you can work with him, and who knows what's going to happen."
Yeah.
If God wants me there, I will be there. I mean, and it's strange because it's just 2 days after I retired. So.
We'll see how much work you want to do again. Huh?
Yeah, I will do my work as I want. And the guy told me there is no hurry because he has a system working right now and he has to upgrade it to a new system. So as long as the old system works, it's okay. So there's no hurry, and I will work with this guy. We'll see what happens.
And in the course of our relationship too, man, I've gotten to know all three of your kids with a little bit of familiarity. And you know, for people who worry about, boy, if I go on this journey and I don't know how to plan all, because I think the fear that something bad could happen here will always keep you in your status quo. Mm-hmm. It just will.
Yeah.
But your kids have turned out wonderfully well, and that doesn't validate anything, because some kids go off the rails. But man, I've had some of your kids in my home. I've been with them in their homes. To me, it's amazing the relationships God gives, even across continents and country boundaries.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and a burden for us when we left the system. Said what will happen with our kids? Well, they were all baptized. They were already engaged with Jesus, but you never know. And that's one thing I heard a lot from other people who were on the balance and they didn't know what to do. They said, yeah, but and the kids, what's happening? I said, well, God is powerful, and if you lead by example, because and you explain the things, we explain the things to our kids why we were doing that, and they understood, but it was also very hard on them because they lost all their friends. They had few friends of the same age, mm-hmm. and they didn't see them after we left. So it was said, yeah, but make friends with the kids you are in the classroom and in the college, and they turn out to be great.
And find a way to walk with Jesus that isn't about we go to the same building on a certain day, yeah. but it's life in Him. And
yeah.
it's, Sarah and I have so much more time for friendships, both unbelieving friends and yeah. believing friends back home,
yeah.
And we've had a real joy in, because we're not having meetings about meetings. We're not. I was in so many meetings, planning meetings, and they never seemed to work out as well as we'd hoped. What I love about people I cross paths with, like you and others, and when I come to Europe, and I think you're the only one I've seen that I met. I've met some other people before, but don't know them well. You're the only real friendship that we've had over the years that get a chance to be together. But that whole idea of if you take the risk to go on this journey, then you will have, there's different ways that you're going to assess what's fruitful and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
The old fruitfulness, we kind of have our security boundaries there. You know, go back to the parkour analogy. We kind of know how to climb that stairway and hold that rail and do what's safe. But if we're going to live more adventuresome in the life of Christ, that takes a little bit of a different, I'm willing to learn to trust Him rather than what I want
yeah,
to do.
And that's something you have to learn every day, because that's not something we are taught.
Yeah. A friend I met in Australia asked me, 6 months into our transition, so we're still hurting, still feeling the full weight of betrayal, still feeling the uncertainty of we don't know what our future will be, that my vocation was tied up in, quote-unquote, the church ministry I was a part of, and my passions to help others learn to walk in this journey, that's all tied into that. And I remember him saying to me, asking Wayne, how much do you think you guys did at the church you were part of out of fear?
And yeah.
I said, what do you mean?
Yeah.
He said, well, fear that, you know, somebody would go off course. Fear that somebody would teach the wrong thing. Fear that somebody. And he just went down this list of fears. And I said, okay, 90%. He goes, really? He said, no, not too many people answer that honestly. I said, well, yeah. I mean, our policies are all about, well, we're afraid that could happen, so let's do this. We got to plug this hole here, so let's create that policy. And he said, and this is what he said to me. It was one of those life-changing. Well, it wasn't life-changing at the moment. It's become life-changing. But what he said was, so you know well the church that fear builds. You have yet to discover the church that trust builds. And I just went, wow, that's... At the time, I went, okay, that sounds like a nuclear bomb. Don't touch that. If no one touches that, nobody's going to get hurt, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And the other part of my heart is going, gosh, that's true. I really want to learn that. That's where I ended. You know, maybe a week later, I said, okay, God, I'm willing to let that in. But I really do want to know what a life looks like that trusts you. And if we grow in that trust, that I think that's the big thing. When I look down a street, if I'm a parkour guy, and here these guys have, well, here we're going to do it. I mean, just the way they think about a street park, just walking through one park, he said, oh, this is a perfect thing. You do this. I wouldn't have seen that if you would have talked to me about parkour for a week before. I'm sorry, really? But when you operate your life in trust instead of fear, when it's God's
yeah.
got my kids in His hand, God, whether it's vocational, whether it's pastoral, whether it's your money making dealer or not, just being a parent, a believer, to live out of fear all the time—fear of how I'm going to be judged, fear of what other people are going to think of me, fear my kids are not going to learn to follow Jesus without Sunday school, fear that I'm not going to have any friends if I lose some friends that I've been religious with for a long time, And yet people I've talked to on this journey, the ones that don't get scared 10 feet out and run back, the ones
yeah.
that get through the initial
yeah,
part
yeah.
of learning to live out of trust instead of fear, I never hear anybody regret that. I don't ever hear that.
Yeah. Yeah, I can understand that. I can understand that because it's my case.
Me but, too.
And you know, the one of the, I think one of the biggest fear is about the others, what the others are going to think or to say about me. We say in French the fear of being a moron.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's not a word we get to use in America anymore.
Yeah, I know. That's what, if I remind you of this one.
We might find a better word for that, or we're going to be banned.
And not only in the church. I mean, this kind of fear you can find it everywhere, at work, and you know, fear of not knowing something, and you look like a loser because you don't know obvious things, and so this is what's part also of something I have to learn. Mm. But now I think I'm okay. I don't care.
I think that's what
people think or say about me. What I care about was Jesus and what my father up there is thinking about me.
Yeah.
The rest, okay.
Yeah, you can't control the rest of it. And we joked about early on. We're in the land. I was just in Zurich yesterday, and we're going through a couple of, you know, big Catholic church here, big Protestant church here, and the whole Zwingli, Calvin, Luther, yeah. The whole influence of that in this area.
Yeah.
And you look back over the course of most of the lives, even the churches we attend, at some point, the group of people you're part of now were part of a group of people that says, the system isn't working.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we need something more alive, more fresh. And they go out of it and then create the same system with a different theological flavor, absolutely, to which now they judge people who don't have the same theological flavor that they have.
Yeah.
And it's a cycle that we've repeated. It's sitting in the middle of the Reformation and going, you know what? The same thing I have a heart for. I think those guys, most of them, I've never been a Calvin fan. I'm trying to figure out how Calvin did what he did, or thought how he thought. But some of the other reformers, we moved away from indulgences. We moved away from, you know, our being bought out of purgatory and hell and all the fear. I mean, I come from a tradition that says there's something more alive about God than we seem to be able to put into our institution.
Mm-hmm.
And if people don't like that, if people are threatened by it, you know what? You're probably part of something that did too, unless you're part of the Catholic Church. That's the only one that's been in there. But even go back to Pentecost, at some point, all believers were something that said, you know, following Jesus in a real growing trust kind of way is the most powerful, refreshing, joyful way to live.
Yes.
But the start of it is scary. And either you're going to get through that and get down that trailhead. Like even today when we were on that trail, I didn't know where we were going when we started.
Me neither.
That became obvious later. But at the end of it, we see a cross on a hill, and that's the target. It's at the summit of this view. But man, when we were going off, I had no idea that's where we were going. I had no idea the trail was that steep. It wasn't a trail. In fact, there was no trail. We had moles that had torn up the ground, and we were kind of following mole trails. But, you know, sometimes that the journey, and we got to see some wonderful things and had some great laughs together. And that to me is a good parable of what this journey is like. If you're going to if you're going to get off the main road and you're going to go on a little wild adventure, and you're going to not give in to your fears. You don't know where you're going to end up. And I certainly probably, I just think, I don't have regrets about getting where we went to this morning. But if I'd have known that's what we had in mind, I'd have probably said, hey, let's do something else.
No, I knew where I was going. But the past to go there, I knew we had to go up. So up we went.
We did, and it was steep, and we just talked about whether we could. And then we finally, there's this cross up there. It was a nice little picture of, we're going to get there.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful place, and it was worth doing.
View. Yeah.
But now my legs are tired.
Mine are okay.
Yeah.
But I'm younger than you.
I hope people listening to this have the encouragement to, when God nudges you beyond your comfort status quo, and all your fears kick in, you know what? To learn the life that Jesus wants to build in you out of a growing trust in his love and who he is a far better life than staying in the safe places that eventually will betray you when you need it most.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, thanks for making me stay. excited to go home tomorrow to my baby.
Yeah, I can understand that.
My family. It's 2 weeks in Europe seems like 4 years. I don't know why that's true. I feel like I came here 4 years ago.
Yeah, because you went to Swiss German and
You got to lighten up on the Swiss Germans. They're going to invade you. That's Silvio
they already
in Valorbe. Come down here and teach this man something.
They already invade me.
You know what I've met too, just quickly, because I know we're way over time, but I've had a lot of conversation with individuals on this journey who are right on the cusp of something new, but pretty disillusioned, looking for a friend to walk alongside them just to help. And the only reason I mention that, because I think those of us who've been through this transition know having a friend, not a friend who wants to control you and tell you what to do, but have a friend that'll cheerlead you to keep leaning into Jesus and not being afraid is an important part of life. And I just want to say, those of you who listen to the God Journey, who have gone on this journey, who are finding greater freedom, turn around and look for some people you might be able to encourage.
Yeah.
And make yourselves available and just say, hey, if you need somebody to cheer you on, I'll cheer you on. Just don't. What mostly happens is somebody wants to roadmap the journey for the people behind them.
Yeah.
Because you can sell that book, but don't do it.
That's not good.
Help people learn to follow him. Hey, thanks, Silvio.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me in your home.
It was always a pleasure to have you here.
Always a trial, you know that.
Yeah, yeah, also, as well. But pleasure is mostly over the trial.
Mine?
Yeah.
A pleasure is mostly mine?
Yeah.
Get to be me.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.